This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alrighty, hour number two here on Tiki and Tierney around the country. What's happening? Let's get into it. Football, we're coming to you now. We got you. As we continue from our studios, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. You want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. All right. So, you know, the one thing that just bled over constantly, and this was a real theme of the show for weeks, as, you know, we really got after Rob Manfred. It was just very sloppy negotiations. The players were constantly taking to Twitter. You know, we like Trevor Bauer, but he was probably a little over-assertive, probably needs to dial it back at some point and let things play out. I thought that, at least.
Yeah.
You know, Max Scherzer was very prominently out there on social media putting his thoughts out there. And maybe they just need to leverage what Major League Baseball is putting out there. I get that. I'm not trying to be unfair to Trevor. I do like him. But it was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
From the amount of games that we thought they would play to what was proposed to...
what was already predetermined before they even started negotiating,
if
apparently.
If you believe that, although he had to recount that, but I hear him recant that. To the, remember this initial wave, the three bubble cities, let's hook up in Arizona, in Texas, and in Florida.
Yeah, all where they're surging.
Yeah, thank God that plan was scrapped out. Now we'll go to the stadiums and we'll play with no fans, which hopefully that works out. It's been a real messy few months for baseball, and baseball has felt the wrath of fans in the court of public opinion, and rightfully so, and from a lot of hosts like me. I've been a little bit more direct and harsh toward Manfred than Tiki, but Tiki's been on him too. But then you get to the NFL. Right? And NFL's king. And the NFL seems to be bulletproof with certain things because people, here we are yesterday, waxing poetic, rightfully so, championing this great deal for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And think about the 2 or 3 days prior to that, Cam Newton going to the Patriots. There was a lot of stuff there. Like, when it comes to football, we will find anything to talk about pertaining to football. When it came to baseball, or even comes to baseball, it's almost like we reach for the negative and we exploit that. Why does football enjoy such a discernible advantage when it comes to that sort of criticism and speculation?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in just off the top of my head, I think because football is so popular and the physical nature of it makes you, I don't know, appreciate the careers of these players. Because it could be gone tomorrow and the contracts aren't guaranteed. And so, like, you're like almost literally, unless you're a quarterback or someone who has a humongous signing bonus, it's prohibitive that they cut you. You're almost literally playing for your job every month or every year or whatever the iteration may be, right? So it feels like there's just a better appreciation for the player in that sense. Whereas in baseball, and this is a misnomer because most guys aren't making this much money, but you look at baseball players and you're like, oh, Mike Trout and Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and Kershaw, Strasburg.
Cole.
They're making so much money, their grandkids' grandkids don't have to worry about money, right? They're making that much money. You're just like, oh. I mean, and you're complaining because you got a pinky, you know, nail hang or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so when they start complaining about money, it just perceptually we go, dude, you guys are making so much money. What are you worried about? And it's guaranteed. You know, shut up. But the truth is, it's not that way. I think it's a perception thing. So at the end of the day, to answer your question directly, the perception is that the NFL player has to earn it every game, whereas the MLB player you know, is the spoiled, you're playing this, you know, calm, easy game, and it's, you know, take what you have and be happy. And that's not the case, but that's the perception nationally. And so when it gets really convoluted, like it did this offseason for Major League Baseball, in particular Rob Manfred, you lash out against it because of that preconceived notion. In the NFL, they don't have that kind of strife. The last time that we saw this was 2011, when there was the lockout, and it was like, oh, your owners are crying poverty. You're $12 billion or whatever it was at that time, $10 billion business. What do you mean you're not making any money? And so that was the last time it hit the National Football League. But up until then, there's been labor peace. Whereas in Major League Baseball, it feels like there's, you know, free agency. You're not signing any players this offseason for the last 3 years. You know, it's like, where are you spending your money? Are you trying not to spend money? And so it's just, I think it's a perception thing.
And that's it. So you think it's rooted solely in perception? I think there's nothing else more tangible. Well, by the way, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I think it's a great theory.
Because I think it's fan and media understanding of what's happening.
Yeah.
Right? You and I know this because we try to talk about the NFL, like, salary cap and, you know, what this, like, I mean, I know it. And I'm still like, I think that's right, but I'm not positive. And so whereas in baseball, it's just more clear cut. So it's easier to dissect and dive into when you get into financial issues. And so we want to, so that that fans and me and consumers of media can comprehend it, right? You dumb it down. In the NFL, when you dumb it down, it's really simple, right? You either do your job or you get cut. In Major League Baseball, it's either you do your job or you don't do your job, you're not getting cut. You're just going to keep making the guaranteed money that you have.
You know, it's probably somewhat similar, you know, in terms of our medium, what you and I do every day. You know, think about the the long time, whether it's a local or a national afternoon drive host, right? Whether it was Francesa here or Jim Rome, who's a Hall of Famer, literally, who precedes our show every day, which is great for us here on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. We love Romy. Compare those guys who are making big time money, millions, and rightfully so, millions, plural, over the years, versus the young up and comer who's coming up and getting a few hundred bucks to do a show on a Saturday or a Sunday, and he might make a pretty glaring mistake, whether it's a point of reference, a fact, a year, whatever it might be, and that person is not going to get as chastised on Twitter, and because it's like, you know what? Number one, it's a different expectation, but there's also a much more relatability. Like, hey, listen, they're just trying to get going. You know, not that you want to get that wrong often, and if you do, you'll never go from the young ascending broadcaster to somebody who's entrenched for a long time.
You won't be doing it long.
You'll never, exactly. But, you know, the guy who's been in the same chair for 15, 20 years, if he makes or she makes an egregious mistake, and we all know what those mistakes could be, then that person's going to get ripped.
Yeah, and it's unfair, but that's just how it works.
I don't know if it's unfair. I don't know that it's unfair.
I mean, if you're making egregious mistakes and you're making millions of dollars, you should still be ripped for it.
Well, that's what I said.
I mean, the other way around. If you're not making millions of dollars and you're making egregious mistakes, you shouldn't be just getting the benefit of the doubt because you shouldn't be doing it, right?
No. But agreed. But the volume that
how loud it is.
It would be different. It would be just viewed through a different prism. Number one, not as many people would hear it, so that would lead to a lower decibel level. But I mean, I think that the plight of the football player, the realness of head trauma, and all these other things that have, you know, permeated, you know, our medium for certainly the last, you know, 7-8 years, big time with concussions, maybe a little bit before that. I remember hearing this when I was a kid. The average lifespan of an NFL player is 3.5 years, whatever it is, right? I mean, you just go to profootballreference.com, and it's littered. And I mean people that we even – not like a guy who was on a team that nobody could remember. Players that, like, were around that you actually remember.
Yeah.
And then you're like – and you go – they're like, wow, they only played 4 years? Yeah. What happened?
That's right.
Well, their knees gave out. Yeah. They had this thing, you know, blew up on them. They have screws in their arm, titanium this in their leg. Baseball players don't have that.
No, you're right.
There's a little sympathy and empathy to the, you know, the violence of the sport.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. This is why this is pertinent, is because the MLB has gotten crushed over the last, 2 months, 2.5 months, because of the negotiations around the COVID restart and what's going to happen. Now, the NFL has dodged all of this because they have been out of season. And the only thing they had to worry about really was the draft and offseason workouts. The draft, they actually hit a home run, you know, in the instead of having to go to Las Vegas, or instead of, you know, not having, because we all wanted to go to Las Vegas, but instead of being in Las Vegas, they actually hit a home run with the at-home draft because it was kind of cool. Then the offseason stuff, the players, I mean, it sucks because they're not around everybody, but I mean, if I'm an offseason player, other than missing out on learning something new, it's kind of nice to not have to be in the facility every day and getting grinded on.
No question.
Right? So they've dodged it up until now. And most recently, we just saw a proposal. It's still in the proposal phase, that the NFL, in anticipation of a financial decline or a revenue decline this season, is talking about putting 35% of player salaries in escrow. Mm-hmm. So not paying them and you know, obviously not taking that money away. Mm-hmm. You're not cutting their salaries like Major League Baseball did, but taking 35% of their salaries, putting it in escrow so that they can pay them once the league is more financially solvent. The reason I think this is being received differently is twofold. Is when Major League Baseball first said to the players, look, we're going to be short on money right now, and we're not going to open our books to show you how much money we're making. There is no revenue sharing in baseball. This is the big difference. And we're not going to show you how much money we're making, but we're not making money. Trust us, we're going to cut your salaries, pro rata to how many games we played. And, you know, the players, interestingly, kind of said okay, right? Despite not having to, they said okay back in March. But then the owners came back again and were asking them to take a percentage of the proration. So 70%
of the absence of fans.
Because of the absence of fans. So we're gonna lose 40%. So now you gotta take 70 cents on the dollar of your proration.
Yep.
And it just got ugly. Now in the NFL, that won't happen because one, putting it into escrow is not saying we're not going to give it to you. Just because we're not making money, we're not giving it to you. Mm-hmm. They're saying we're not making money, we don't want to give it to you right now. And going forward, since we already have a revenue sharing deal, whatever the money is the money is, right? If you're going to get 48.5%, we're going to get 51.5%.
But what if you need the money now?
Well, that's...
How would you feel about that if you're playing for the Giants right now?
I mean, I would hope that I was more financially, you know, solvent and, you know, okay, aware.
I got. What about the fifth wide receiver?
And saving for rainy days. But at the end of the day, you can't help that. Now, the beauty of having... And I don't want to get too geeky into financial instruments, but the beauty of having money in escrow is that it's your money. You can borrow against it. You know what I mean? There's commercials about this. You know, I need money now. It's my money. Give it to me.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's not coming to you yet, right? So I think there is it's just a smarter way that the NFL is thinking about, because they haven't done this yet. This is just a proposal. It's a smarter way for the NFL to think about controlling their costs, because they know that revenue is going to fall, right? The P&L, right? Profit and loss, right? Let me show it to me. How much money you're making, how much money you're pushing out. They know that they're not going to make as much. They need to be able to control how much they're pushing out. So to control that, you put it in escrow. And it's smart, because in escrow, they can reap the benefits of the financial upside if they play their cards right. So I think the NFL is just doing it smarter than Major League Baseball did it, and not creating a huge backlash, even though there has been some backlash. Michael Thomas is the one that jumps out most. He took serious issue with this idea because he said basically the PA told them to go kick rocks because the union doesn't want this to happen unless it's collectively bargained. Mm-hmm. And it's not, because who was looking forward to a pandemic? Nobody. Mm-hmm. So there's no way it can be in your collective bargaining agreement.
No, impossible to forecast that.
Yep.
But what about this? So this little, you know, insulated bubble of protection that for the most part the NFL players enjoy that baseball players don't. And again, for the reasons we've documented, just the ferocity of the sport, the short shelf life, et cetera, in large part, they've earned that. They deserve that shield. But now, and again, Mahomes worth every dime, $503 million. Mm-hmm. He should have gotten $903 million. He's worth every penny. if you're going to give Steven Strasburg, who I love, you know, $35 million a season to pitch every fifth day, which he now got, if you're going to give Nolan Arenado $35 million a year and all these other guys who bank $35 million, there's about eight or nine of them. Mike Trout leads the way, the highest salary of any baseball player. But for a pitcher who's going to make 30-something starts, then a quarterback who is directly in charge of the trajectory of the franchise deserves that or more. But as these numbers soar, right, with Mahomes and now, you know, Dak's going to get, if he plays on the tag, $32.5 million, if they settle, $34, $35, whatever. And then eventually the Kyler Murrays and the Bakers and the Darnolds, if it pans out, and the Josh Allens, they're going to do Lamar Jackson. These guys are going to get so much money, and I have no issue with it. My point is, do the elevated or will the elevated NFL salaries lessen the potency of the shield that the players currently enjoy in the court of public opinion? Because the numbers are still relatively swallowable.
Yeah, no, I don't,
for fans.
I mean, I don't think so. I think that the NFL player is viewed differently because of the nature of the sport, whereas the baseball player isn't. And the way that the isn't viewed as I don't know, as vulnerable. The baseball player isn't viewed as vulnerable, even though that's not the truth, because clearly the life expectancy is not, you know, sport expectancy. It probably isn't that much different if you take out the outliers, right? The guys that play, you know, 20 years and those that play less than one, right? You take out the outliers, it might be rather similar. But when you talk about these exorbitant contracts in the NFL, it's mostly just quarterbacks, right? There's a couple DNs here and there, but it's mostly quarterbacks. Wide receivers are getting a little bit, but they're never gonna, you know, be in the $30 million range. And so I think it's you put these quarterbacks in a different, you know, situation than a lot of other players.
Mm-hmm. All right, good conversation. Something to follow for sure. Coming up next here, Teague. So we all remember the Ivy League was the first to cancel their college hoops tournament. Initially drew some criticism. Then they were lauded for it, for being kind of a pioneer. The latest decision, though, that could impact the college football season. And yes, the Ivy's right in the middle of it again. We'll get to that coming up next. Teague and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Do you know that right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. All right, Teague and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio on this Wednesday. Hope you're doing well. And, of course, simulcast around the country here on the Tube, CBSSportsNetworkRadio.com, Apple iTunes. You miss anything, go grab it on Twitter at Teague and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. So the Ivy League, I personally think there's been a lot of overreaction to what the Ivy League's decision to push back the football season will do for the conferences that we're all anxious to watch again on Saturday. I don't think it has much of a direct impact, but that is separate from my fears of the inability of the like the SEC of the power schools to actually start the season on time just based on the spike of the virus. It's not what the Ivies decided to do as much as it is just the circumstances independent of the Ivies' decision, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. But, I mean, you bring up the Ivies because the Ivies, as we all remember, were the first to cancel their conference tournament back in early March. And we were, you know, kind of scratching our heads because we were all discounting the severity of this potential virus, this Wuhan virus that really was actually the Italian virus that came to the United States from Europe. And so, like, we didn't think about it in that sense until everybody else started following suit. Now, that was because there was an immediate threat to health and safety. I think these circumstances are a little bit different as it pertains to fall sports, in particular college football. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ivies, because they are a smaller conference, it's not revenue-centric. I mean, money is a big part of, obviously, any football program, but it's not the deciding factor on whether or not you're going to play games or when you're going to play them or sponsorships or TV money or any of that other stuff. So they have the luxury, unlike some of the other conferences like the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, etc., who kind of have to play in the fall based on the TV contracts and the schedules. And so, while we laud the Ivy Leagues for being the forerunners and having foresight and with college basketball, I don't think they're going to be the precedent setters for college football, because they can do it in the spring and it's not going to really affect them because they're not playing these robust out of conference schedules. It's going to, you know, screw up five or six other conferences' schedules
and networks.
Exactly. They're mostly playing amongst themselves.
Yes.
And so they have the luxury to do this. Now, there is an impact though, because there's a lot of kids that are playing football in the fall or want to play football in the fall in the Ivy Leagues, and they're probably not going to even be on grounds or campuses for a lot of this, as they're talking about remote learning still for a lot of these college campuses with all these people coming from disparate places around the country. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting story. I don't think it's going to be a precedent story like Ivy League basketball was.
I totally agree. I'm actually trying to find this, and for some reason I'm just having no luck with it. The capacity for, maybe this will get me into a little bit here. Just to kind of, here you go. All right, so I got something here. So this was from 2 years ago, but I can't imagine that it fluctuated wildly since then. So week one, because this is part of it. Now, the results don't matter, but Princeton had 10,000 fans at their game against San Diego.
Yep.
It's a nice, healthy number, actually. Princeton University Stadium. Yale-Lehigh game, that was 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Brown had 3,700 as they hosted Bryant. Columbia had 3,800 as they hosted Wagner. Then 3,800 for Harvard, 3,000 for Penn, 14,000 for Cornell, and a little less than 2,500 for Dartmouth. So you look at that, and not that that's the full motivating force and factor behind this, but it's a big part of the engine. I mean, if you only have, 5,000 or 6,000 people going through the turnstile, how many tickets are comped? How many cars are coming in? And then you try to compare that to an SEC venue where there's 80,000 seats, or a Big Ten or other venues where there's 100,000 seats.
Yeah.
And it's just a very different impetus behind the decision to either cancel, kick it down the road as long as you can, and just, reassess as you go through or continue to assess. But I agree, because at the time, and you and I had to walk back our criticisms a little bit, which we certainly did. We had no problem with that.
Oh, definitely. Because I was like, what's wrong with them? What are they doing?
Yeah.
They don't need to do that. Come on. Just don't let people in the stands. It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we felt badly for the student-athlete. We thought somebody needed to stand up for them, especially for student-athletes who work. Most student-athletes tackle the classroom with vigor and integrity. Most schools do that. Whether you're Ivory or whether you're a JUCO, you'd like to think that most of the students there are there for two reasons, right? But you know that if you go to an Ivy League school, you are there to become a real contributing member to society based on your academic prowess. Not that you run a 4.3 or 4.22, 30, 40 as a wideout. So I felt real badly for these young men and women, because you go to a school like, Brown, not because you think you're going to be the next Steph Curry, but because, you're borderline brilliant. You're really accomplished in sports. Not good enough to play at some other schools, but you could do both. And you put in, they only play on the weekend because they don't want it to interfere during the regular season. There's no, Tuesday night games for Dartmouth. It's all Friday and Sunday. So they do that, and they keep the ability to focus on your studies really there. And to do that for the entire season, and then at the most pivotal moment have it stripped away, was just inherently unfair until it wasn't.
Because until everybody else canceled the tournament. And then really, I remember us positioning it as, well, who's going to the NCAA tournament? Is it Harvard? Or I forget who it was. It was Harvard,
that was,
and somebody.
The problem.
But whoever the other team was, they couldn't beat the team that was going. I mean, it was just an odd thing. And then obviously they canceled the NCAA tournament, so it was a moot point. But I think there is a significant difference, and I'm having this conversation now personally, BT, because AJ is in this situation. He's going into a senior year in high school.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot of FCF offers for scholarships. Those are football championships. series, like Stony Brooks, et cetera, you know, Fordham's, you know, those
yeah,
squads.
Sure.
But he hasn't got an FBS offer. But he
That's
has
surprising
got,
to
but
me.
He ha- but he, and me too. Man. But he has gotten some Ivy League offers.
Yeah.
And so Ivy Leagues are obviously FCS. And so over Father's Day weekend, they were here. We had this long conversation about what he wanted from school. And it was, do you want, you know, what kind of football, first of all, what kind of academic environment do you want? Mm-hmm. Because he has a great conversation with Princeton and some of these other schools. And it's like, well, you need to go see these schools because they're very different than I think what you may think they are. Mm-hmm. Right. Just because they're Ivy Leagues. But athletics is not going to be first. You know what I mean? There's 10,000 people that'll come to the game. Maybe 5,000.
If you're lucky, yeah.
If you're lucky, maybe 5,000.
Yeah.
Or you could go to you contrast that to say my alma mater, the University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. There's going to be 50,000 to 60,000 people every game, even if they're not good, and they're getting better. Bronco's doing a good job down there. Mm-hmm. And so, from an academic, a social, and an athletic standpoint, you really got to decide what you want. And when you start thinking about, you know, how this coronavirus is changing our world, right? It's changing our world in total, but it's changing our sports world as well. And we just saw Stanford eliminate 11 of their varsity programs.
Yeah.
Now, Stanford has 36 varsity programs. Most colleges only have 18 to 25
or
so. They have
like squash, and they have fencing. They've got some.
They have a ton.
Yeah,
36 sponsored, so financially sponsored programs. So it's not like intramurals. It's 36,
Pac-12 programs.
Exactly. So they're eliminating 11 of those, one, because of the coronavirus, but two, it's just becoming untenable. And so, you know, back to this conversation with AJ, and you know, what I'm advising him right now is – if football is most important to you,
yeah,
then the Ivy League is probably not the place to go, right? Go walk on somewhere else. Go walk on at Miami or Virginia or wherever and hope you earn yourself a scholarship. But if academics and the social environment and, you know, the alumni, you know, base, which you can't ever discount, especially if you're going to an Ivy League school, if that's more important to you than the football environment,
yep,
then go to an Ivy League. But realize that the Ivy Leagues, as we've seen over this last year,
yeah,
the sports aren't. They're not the drivers.
No,
right?
And they never will be.
And
ever.
They never will be. And no, they shouldn't be, to be perfectly honest
with you. I
agree. Right? But it's a decision that I think a lot of kids are now reckoning with as the world, under this coronavirus situation that we're in, starts to present itself each and every day. There's a different scenario that's just, it's interesting to think about. Whereas before, a year ago, you didn't have to think about it this way.
You left out one option. So he can go to one of the Ivies and mm-hmm, get money and play where football secondary.
No, they don't give money at Ivies. So,
they can't disguise it up as some sort of academic.
Yeah, I'm sure they give some.
But you're not going to get need-based, obviously.
No, of course
but,
not.
okay, so there's a way to creatively dress it up, but I got you. So you'll play at an Ivy or another FCS school.
Yep, yep.
Walk on at a powerhouse.
Yep.
Or the third option you left out, and this is what's so sad for so many kids, not just Dave, but AJ, go and beast as a senior and haul in 18 touchdowns as a receiver, which he's capable of doing.
Yeah, because he had 14 last year.
Oh, yeah, but by the way, there might not be a season.
That's right. That's exactly right. And
that
they missed the kids, the juniors and seniors. They missed all the camps. They missed all of these showcases. And it's not just football we're talking about. Football is the main one. But, I mean, this was lacrosse. This was soccer. This was everything. All of these showcases, they were all canceled this year. Soccer in the spring. And, you know, it left a lot of kids in the lurch. And I feel for them because they have decisions to make that aren't going to involve a sport that they love. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one thing I know they're doing. I know we got a break, but one thing I know they're doing in Jersey. I don't even know if you heard about this, Teak, but you know how they have those nice turf fields all around. Some of those, so one's like brand new in our neighborhood. So you know, Jen will go there. The four of us, Jen will run around the track with Kinsley, and you know, I'll throw Colts and BP. Long story short, I see a kid in the dugout after where, because then Jen went home with the kids and I did some track work, as many quotes as you could put around track work. Your partner did some track work and I was there by myself sweating. And I figured you'd appreciate the track work part. I see a kid in the dugout, but he's like 17, 18 years old. I thought he was a coach for a summer team or an AAU team. I get to talking to him. The local high school, what they're doing is it's called a last chance tournament, right? So they're basically, they're taking all of the Jersey high schools from the north and the central part of the state, and they're seeding them even against the southern schools in the state. And based on anticipated ranking, it's like double elimination, and it starts in like a week or two. And it's not directly through the high school because for legal purposes and insurance purposes, it couldn't be. But you're wearing your high school uniform.
That's interesting.
Scouts could go. At least baseball has that option. But football, I don't
you're
know.
You're not organizing that grassroots.
No. But by the way, which way is he leaning? Do you know yet?
If he doesn't get an FBS offer,
yep.
I think if he goes to an FCS school, it's going to be an Ivy. So
that's a good option, man. It's going to be okay in life. I have a sense.
He'll be fine. And I told him, you are fortunate. You have the luxury of picking the school that's right for you.
That's true.
Not the one that gives you a scholarship.
That is very well said and very rare for a lot of student athletes. I got you. All right, coming up next, Bryant McFadden, former NFL player, CBS Sports HQ analyst. We'll jump around the Mahomes stuff. What's it mean for Dak? Some other pertinent football items at the Racks update, which is right now. Here's Rich. The NWSL Challenge Cup continues tonight at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on CBS All Access as Amani Dorsey and the Sky Blue FC squad take on the Houston Dash. It's a cool name, the Houston Dash. Then catch it tomorrow morning at 10 on CBS Sports Network. All right, we dash back to the NFL, and we're joined by Bryant McFadden, former DB, Steelers 6 years, 7 years in total, and really good analyst, one of the young guns on CBS Sports HQ, and he's been with us many times. Bryant, welcome back, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us again. Got a question for you. If you were still playing, you haven't been removed as long as I have, but if you were still playing and the NFL said, we're going to put some of your salary, like 30% of it, 35% of it in escrow, what would be your reaction to it? Because that's what the proposal on the table that the NFLPA obviously hates, and some players do as well. They don't want to see that happen. What would be your reaction to that?
Man, I probably would say no, especially, if I was younger in my career. For us, playing a non-guaranteed sport, where contracts are not guaranteed, you want it now. You want to see it now. So for me personally, based on seeing how contracts have been dispersed throughout the National Football League with certain players, granted injuries or inconsistent production may not allow you to see the entire contract,
yep.
I probably would say no.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the NFL has dodged, and BT and I were talking about this earlier, they've dodged much of the financial downside of what the coronavirus has presented to other sports. Baseball, we saw it play out very publicly, and it was really ugly. Football has dodged it. Do you think that, because there is a new labor agreement, which they got done early, and thank God they got it done early for, sanity's sake. They got it done early, so there's this cooperation towards the new TV deal, which is just around the corner. Do you think this is going to become as big of an issue in football as it was in baseball?
No, I don't think so. I think, oddly enough, the game of football has been extremely lucky, like you just mentioned. Think about this. They were able to get through their season, play the Super Bowl, entertaining year, entertaining Super Bowl, and then, the pandemic happened, right? And throughout the entire process, throughout the offseason, the NFL has still found a way to win. I mean, the draft was a virtual draft, something we've never took part in, as analysts or as fans, but it was a win.
Yeah.
They won in the draft. You look at the free agency period, some of the unusual names that were moved throughout free agency, starting with Tom Brady. They won. They just won last week with Cam Newton. They won again with Pat Mahomes. So for me, I don't think the NFL would be as unlucky as baseball, primarily because so far throughout this entire difficult process, the NFL has won.
Yeah, they have. That's Bryant McFadden, a two-time champ, by the way, Steelers, and 6 years career there. Is part of the CBS Sports HQ crew. All right, you mentioned Cam, you mentioned Tom. Let's bounce around the quarterback carousel here. Were you surprised that Belichick was interested. Well, let me reframe that. Is it a good marriage? If he's somewhat healthy, with those personalities or the way they do their business, I think it'll be fine. But do you think that Cam and Belichick works if Cam's healthy?
No question. I love it. I love it. I remember right when Cam got released on CBS Sports HQ, that was my prediction, that the Patriots would somehow find a way to sign Cam Newton. Now, it took some time, and they had to do their due diligence, especially when it comes to the health standpoint, but they signed him. And the reason why I love it, guys, is because there are certain organizations, there are certain coaches that can handle different personalities, mm-hmm. right? Look at recent history tells us, Belichick, the organization there in New England, they find a way to get what some people believe to be abnormal personalities in a normal direction.
Yeah.
Corey Dillon, years back with Cincinnati, some people felt like he was difficult to deal with as a teammate, as a player.
Tough
he goes
guy.
To New England, he flourished. Randy Moss, remember how they said he was toxic in Oakland? He goes to New England, he flourished.
Yeah.
Aqib Talib, remember in Tampa?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, he had a lot of issues on the football field and off the football field in Tampa, and then he goes to New England. I mean, all of that, it's not even an issue. It's not even a topic. So for me, based on what we've seen with elite players that some people believe their best years are behind them, they go to New England and they flourish.
But I want to follow up. And by the way, I agree. But I think it's unfair to Cam. You ran through some names. Those names had a track record of either in some on some level, in some spots, being a malcontent, being mm-hmm. divisive in a locker room. What's Cam's, aside from being not healthy the last couple of years, but that'll resolve itself or it won't. What's Cam's MO? Well, he likes to dress a little different. I mean, and he likes to dap people up, and he likes to do a little Superman. I think it's so unfair, not I mean from you, Brian, but how a lot of people positioned him almost as a divisive figure. The only thing we don't know is if he can still play, if he's healthy. The other stuff, he's a good guy.
You know what the thing is? Cam plays a generic position. He plays the quarterback position.
All right.
Cam is an urban guy. He's a fashionable guy. Most people that can't adjust to a new climate, to a new atmosphere, look at Cam as being a bad guy because he's not the norm for that position.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because of that, they put him in a different category. Me personally, I can care less what you do. As long as you go about your business and you're willing to put your hand in this pile to help us win a sticky Lombardi.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. If you're willing to put your hand in this pile to help us win that sticky Lombardi, let's go to war together. But a lot of people have put Cam in a very, very different category because of how he goes about his business and press conferences, mm-hmm. you know, his fashion statements, his celebration, the celebratory fashion that he has when he scores touchdowns.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people have yet to forgive him for walking off the podium years back in that Super Bowl loss against Denver,
yeah.
which is unfair to him. I totally agree with you. That is unfair. That's an unfair assessment to have for Cam Newton.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, right? Did you bring this up? Because, you know, you think about Cam's persona and who he is as a quarterback. I mean, literally what he looks like as a black quarterback in the National Football League. But it feels like the quarterbacks are actually evolving more towards that. Even the white quarterbacks, like Baker Mayfield, is more like that, you know?
So is Josh Allen.
Josh Allen is more like that. Which Drew Locke is definitely more like that. He's like rapping on the sidelines, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and obviously the MVPs of the last 2 years, Patty Mahomes, and even though he's more polished than Lamar Jackson, it used to be you need to be the stand-up, like perfectly articulated leader to be the quarterback in the National Football League, the guy that makes, you know, $25 to $30 million a year. That's changing. And so it's almost like in New England, they were late catching up to that. But now that Tom Brady's out of the way, they have it. But I think it's a narrative around the position that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. It's not your grandfather's or even your father's quarterback that starts in the National Football League anymore.
No question. I mean, a lot of guys are younger. A lot of guys are more in tune to their urban personality. And we just got to adapt. You know what I mean? We got to adapt. You know, there's no, when you look at how football has changed, There used to be an I formation. Tiki, you know about this I formation, strong guy.
I love the eye. I love the eye.
I don't mean to break you. I kind of know about that too, though. Everybody knows about the I formation.
Yeah, but I knew it. He's saying I knew it intimately. My fullback took my hits, man.
Yeah, he did. You earned it.
Intimately, Tiki knows about it more so than we do, Tierney.
100%. 100%. I'm just messing around.
Yeah, he understands that, but we don't see that anymore, right? Times are changing, you know what I mean, when it comes to how the game is played and how these players handle themselves on and off the football field. As long as they're not causing any harm to anybody, especially themselves and their family, like I said, if they're willing to put their hand in this pile to help hoist a sticky Lombardi, I'm all for it, and fans should feel the same way.
And most of them do. That's Brian McFadden, 7 years in the NFL, 6 with the Steelers, one of the great franchises, couple of Super Bowls, and he's part of the CBS Sports HQ coverage, big part. So, Mahomes, I mean, wow. You know, it's almost reckless, and I kind of said this yesterday, but I prefaced it. I don't want to take away time from you, but I did properly preface it to avoid throwing everything at the young man. But let's call for what it is, man. If this kid stays healthy, this kid's going down as the GOAT.
No question.
I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I mean, and I know those are lofty expectations, but based on what we've seen in only 3 years, no question. I think he has an opportunity to be the best quarterback to ever lace up his cleats in the National Football League. And the reason why I say that, he went into the ideal situation. Quality structured organization, especially on the offensive side, a well-respected head coach and play caller who's been able to bring up another young play caller in Eric Bieniemy, and they're basically hand in hand. They move in the same direction, and then the players that are surrounding him. The offensive line might not be one of the best offensive lines in the National Football League, but they go about their business the right way. You have the fastest individual in the National Football League. And he's not just fast and not quick. He's quick and he's fast. And he's a competitor. You have one of the more versatile elite tight ends in the National Football League. And then if you're telling me your third or fourth option when it comes to catching the football is a former top 10 pick in Sammy Watkins, you would take that.
Yeah. You're okay.
Yeah, and you signed a team-friendly deal. You signed a team-friendly deal so you can keep signing those guys.
That's right.
That works,
be around
man.
A long time. Hey, Brian, we're a little late on time, buddy. Appreciate it. It's been a little bit, and you know we'll be chatting throughout the season and certainly throughout the summer and training camps and all the twists and turns. Thanks a lot, man.
Man, thank you for having me. It's always an honor.
Yeah, be good, Brian. Stay safe, brother.
Make the show a little bit better. You add to it. If you did, I always tell people, thank us for having him on. If you didn't add to the show, we wouldn't bring you on.
Yeah, he's great, though.
You have to thank
us. Great. He's great, though. Really
like
enjoy
him
every time
star.
He comes on. He definitely is.
Yep, Brian McFadden, 2-time champ Steelers. All right, coming up here. So, the Mahomes, what are we doing? We going Mahomes? What do we got here? Hold on. Oh, yeah, that's right. What does it mean for Dak? This font is too small. I thought I could get away without reading my glasses there, but I had to put them back on. What does it mean for Dak specifically in terms of his contract off of Mahomes's? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.